Here, listen to some audio from a space shuttle liftoff back in 1994.
Last 15 seconds. 12, 11, 10, 9.
You know, I kind of hate to say it, but somehow the drama of space launches has faded. Which shuttle is this? Endeavour, Columbia?
One. Booster ignition and liftoff of Atlantis on a mission to study planet Earth.
Atlantis, of course. But you know, all the shuttle launches kind of sound the same. But if you're flying one of these vehicles, there's quite a difference between the various shuttles, it turns out. And Atlantis is going to be the first shuttle retired as the whole program ends at the end of next year. Atlantis is, in fact, counting down for its last mission right now. And here to look back at the legacy of the old girl, do you call a shuttle an old girl? Well, we'll find out. Joining us right now, Jerry Ross has flown on Atlantis 5 times and is tied for the record of most space flights ever. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, John.
At the Kennedy Space Center, right?
Yes, I'm currently in the astronaut crew quarantine facility here at the Kennedy Space Center, where the prime crew is residing and preparing for their mission here on Friday.
And we're also happy to welcome Colonel William Pales, who was a payload specialist on the very first Atlantis flight back in 1985. Colonel, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, and good morning to you too, Jerry.
Morning, Bill. It's good to hear from you.
Well,
Jerry, let me ask you. You've flown 5 times on Atlantis, twice on 2 of the other shuttles in the fleet, right?
Correct.
Are there any differences between the models? I mean, does one have cup holders, electric windows? You know, what's the option package in Atlantis?
Actually, they're all built basically the very same design. Once you get in one, it's very hard to tell that you're in a different one, John. The biggest difference, I think, is what it feels like as you're flying into space. You'll feel different vibrations, and that's basically all due to the different types of payloads that we carry in the back of the space shuttle in the payload bay.
So you can tell when you're carrying a load. That's the big difference.
Exactly. I think it's like people that drive their pickup truck and it's empty most of the time, but if they have a load of sand or gravel or something in the back, they can certainly tell that it's a different vehicle at that point.
So a light load, more rattle, heavy load, less rattle?
Well, not totally. It's more has to do with the natural frequencies of the entire system based upon the weight and CG of the payloads you're carrying and also where it's mounted in the space shuttle.
I wish I knew what the heck you were talking about there, Jerry, but thanks so much for sharing that. Colonel Pales, when you were on the very first Atlantis flight,
yes,
what was that like to be flying on an untested vehicle?
Well, I can't say that I was particularly worried about it. It was well built. It was the fourth orbiter at the time, so NASA had lots of experience. So really concerns about this orbiter functioning well was not a prime concern for me. So I was just excited about the flight, looking forward to the mission.
So Colonel Pales, all right.
Please call me Bill.
All right, Bill. So no worries about the first flight, but you got to have some emotional heartstrings for the last flight coming up, right?
Well, I think so. You know, I haven't done as much as Jerry or a lot of the other astronauts, of course, but I think it's a very emotional idea to see an era come to an end, represented now by the last flight of Atlantis. And I was privileged to be on the first flight, as you pointed out. And so, yeah, sure, it means a lot. The whole program has been a tremendous success and has meant a lot to the United States. And gratifying to have been part of it, a little sad to see it come to an end.
But, well, Jerry, you know, you just heard Bill saying that it's an emotional idea. But do you not get attached to the craft themselves the way someone would get attached to, like, a boat?
Well, certainly I have that attachment with Atlantis, having flown on it my first 3 flights and my last one and one other mission where we went to the Russian space station Mir. I really feel like it is the queen of the fleet. It's treated me well. It's flown like a champ. And, I have a very strong attachment to Atlantis in particular.
Now, do you call a shuttle, retired or not, the old girl? Or you used a she, but then you used an it? I'm trying to get the pronouns.
Well, I think we probably would treat a space shuttle much like the Navy treats a ship, and we refer to them as a female term.
You know, my 11-year-old daughter Zoe gave me a question to ask you guys. Are you up for that?
Sure.
Bill Pales, when you enter the very first bit of the atmosphere, can you tell that you've moved out of space and are in the top of the atmosphere?
Well, when you come back into it, I think the easiest way to know that you're starting to get back into the upper reaches of the Earth's atmosphere is that you start to have a decelerating effect due to the atmosphere. And that causes your checklist that had been floating in front of you to start slowly moving towards the floor of the vehicle. And that's your first indication that you are truly back, going back home.
Jerry Ross and William Pales, the Atlantis gets retired. Do you have a wish for the Atlantis, where she should go? Air and Space Museum, of course, is one option, but where do you think she should go?
Well, it's my understanding that the Air and Space has requested the Discovery, which is the oldest of the current flying
right.
vehicles, and it has enough the most flights on it. There are certainly a lot of well-qualified facilities to take the other two vehicles. My personal opinion would be, being a former Air Force guy, I'd like to see it go to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to the Air Force Museum, which is a tremendous facility.
And for you, Colonel Pales?
Same thing. I was just thinking that. Of course, I'm Air Force, and it's a great museum up there, and so I think they ought to get Atlantis. That would make a lot of people feel good, I think.
So if I was touring in the Atlantis and at one of these museums, would I get the sort of spiritual chills that you got up there on your first flight?
I don't know. I guess everybody's an individual. I think every person, every astronaut has his or her own experiences. I just have the one, but I'm sure, not to speak for Jerry, but I'm sure it never became old hat. But yeah, I felt it was great to look down at the Earth. We'd been up just a couple of hours and open up the payload bay doors, and being able to look at the Earth from a few hundred miles up was very thrilling. I'm a Christian, and it was nice to see God's creation from a slightly different perspective. And first, it made me feel kind of insignificant. That's understandable, because human beings are kind of small. But within just a few seconds, God conveyed to me that I might be small physically, but that I'm important to Him. And that was a nice thing to feel, an important thing to realize. And so, yeah, it was very meaningful to me.
And he or she, God, that is, still has a better view than you did.
Well, of course, he sees everything. So, I just saw a small part from a few hundred miles up. But I'll cherish that rare opportunity few human beings ever get. And so I was very privileged to have that opportunity.
All right. Colonel William Pales, former U.S. Air Force astronaut, member of the very first Atlantis mission back in 1985, joined us from Corsicana, Texas. Jerry Ross, chief of the Vehicle Integration Test Office at the Johnson Space Center, in part of the countdown for the last mission of Atlantis. Take us out.
3, 2, 1, liftoff.
Man, you're good. Thank you, Jerry.
Great talking to you.
Thank you, John. Good talking to you.
You can check out the Takeaway blog, not for the next Atlantis flight, since there won't be one, but you can get a glimpse at what we're working on and add your 2 cents as what you think we should be working on. Check it out at thetakeaway.org and then click on blog. And tomorrow we'll talk about movies. I won't be here, but you'll talk about movies. We'll talk with a star and the director of Best Worst Movie, a documentary about the lowest rated movie probably ever. And we're wondering, do you have a bad movie that you absolutely love?
This is Alan in Boston. I love 50s science fiction, and I think one of the very worst and most enjoyable is Atomic Submarine.
This is the exciting story of the future, when America's fleet of atomic submarines begins a desperate search for an unknown enemy whose destruction of polar shipping has the nation's back against the wall.
Shapes and sizes of things change through the movie. It's like the continuity person had dropped acid.
Give us your bad movie that you love.
Revenge of the Killer Tomatoes is the all-time worst. Or Liquid Sky, I think.
But Revenge of the Killer Tomatoes isn't supposed to be bad. Let us know what you like at 877-8-MY-TAKE, and we'll continue the conversation about an American third political party, 877-8-MY-TAKE or thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee.
There was Pearl Harbor. That's pretty bad. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.